Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the death today of Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez at the age of 58 after a long battle with cancer. Javier Carreras, who is the author of The Dragon of the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela, joins us to discuss the regional impact of the leader of the Bolivarian Revolution, Hugo Chavez, whose mentor Fidel Castro credits with saving the Cuban Revolution. Then we look further into the legacy of Hugo Chavez with Jennifer McCoy, the director of the Carter Center's Americas program. She previously directed the Carter Center's project on mediation and monitoring in Venezuela. And we will discuss the emotional and political vacuum left in Venezuela following the death of their larger-than-life leader, whose successors are not likely to fill the void, but nevertheless will carry on with the Bolivarian Revolution. Then finally, we will discuss the AIPAC convention underway in Washington, D.C., where, incredibly, the pro-Israel lobby is seeking to make military aid to Israel exempt from the sequester cuts, even though Israel's economy is in better shape than America's, and its latest military technology, like Iron Dome, partly subsidized by the U.S. taxpayers, is more advanced than ours. MJ Rosenberg, who served as Director of Policy Analysis for the Israel Policy Forum and previously was editor of Near East Report, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee's APAC's biweekly publication on Middle East policy, joins us. I'm now joined by Javier Carreras, who is a professor of political science at Amherst College and the author of The Dragon of the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. He serves on the editorial board of Latin American Politics and Society and America's Quarterly and has been a consultant to the United Nations Center for Global Development and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. His latest book is U.S.-Venezuelan Relations Since the 1990s, Coping with Mid-Level Security Threats. Welcome to Background Briefing, Javier Carreras.
Thank you very much.
And the death today of Hugo Chavez at the age of 58 after a long battle with cancer is not a great surprise, although it's been kept as a fairly much a state secret for some time. What are you hearing from Venezuela?
Well, situation in Venezuela is, of course, very tense precisely because so little information was disclosed about Chavez's condition. And so people have felt that not enough information had been provided, and that created an unnecessary crisis. There is a new crisis emerging, which is what is going to be next. The Constitution says that an election has to be called, but no mention of an election has been made yet. So we will keep watching to see what the next steps will be.
Well, under the Constitution, the election has to be held within 30 days, does it not?
There is some room for interpretation. The Constitution says it's not clear, actually. The language is ambiguous. It's not clear whether it says that the election has to be held within 30 days or that the election date has to be set within 30 days.
I see. So, but when you talk about the secrecy surrounding Hugo Chavez's health and the extent to which he spent the last few months of his life in Cuba, does this mean that the Venezuelan people have been caught by surprise by his death?
No. I think most people were not in denial. Most people knew that something very serious was happening and that Chavez wasn't going to be able to come back. Only a few very hopeful folks were thinking that there was a good chance. The news were always very grim ever since Chavez went into his last treatment. The situation is that you have a large number of Venezuelans who want to make sure that the Chavista type of policies prevail. And then you have a very large number of Venezuelans, if we go by the latest election, almost 44% of Venezuelans who absolutely feel that this is the worst possible route you can take. You have an incredibly polarized country. The successor who seems to be the person in charge of the moment, the vice president, Nicolas Maduro, has committed to pursuing the most radical forms of Chavista policies. And this has scared the opposition, but it has also enthralled Chavista supporters. So what you have is an enormous level of polarization. In this moment of uncertainty, Chavista supporters are hoping to make sure that you lock in the course, and the opponents feeling like, well, you know, maybe this might be a time for renegotiation, for conciliation, for sitting down, talking to the opposition, consider alternative views. And everybody has high hopes at the moment.
So given the results of the recent election, which Hugo Chavez won fairly soundly, it's unlikely, is it, that the opponent, Capriles, obviously did not succeed in the last election, will do much better even with Chavismo without Chavez, surely. I mean, isn't there going to be an enormous sympathy vote?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. However, Maduro, who is going to run for the ruling party, is not Chavez, doesn't have the level of charisma, so he's going to lose some votes there. And secondly, Maduro is going to lose some votes because the economic situation has taken a turn for the worse in the last 3 months. In October, Venezuela was experiencing yet another consumer boom. The government was spending significantly. They were hiding the fact that the deficit was getting out of hand. Over the last 2-3 months, the government has had to devalue, it has had to cut spending, and Venezuela is plunging into an economic recession. So the longer that they wait to call for an election, the more that Venezuelans are going to feel economic hardships. Also, the government will need to make more polemical decisions. It's not going to be governing in times of boom times, but in times of austerity. So you're absolutely right. The tide is on the side of the government, but the leader is not Chavez, and the economic context is not as favorable as it was in October. So the victory for the ruling party is not automatic, although it seems like if the election were held today, it could look good for the ruling party.
Again, I'm speaking with Javier Corrales, who's a professor of political science at Amherst College and the author of Dragon in the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. He serves on the editorial board of Latin American Politics and Society and America's Quarterly and has been a consultant to the United Nations Center for Global Development and the American Academy for Arts and Sciences. His latest book is U.S.-Venezuelan Relations Since 1990s, Coping with Mid-Level Security Threats. So the devaluation, the recent one, was about 46%, wasn't it, or something fairly substantial?
Technically about 31%, which is pretty significant,
right.
Though most economists were saying not significant enough to really correct the problem that the government is facing, which is an enormous, gigantic fiscal deficit of almost 16% of GDP. To give you a comparison here, you know, in peripheral Europe, say for example in Greece, Spain, Portugal, the countries that are in worse shape, they have a deficit of about 7-8% of GDP. Venezuela has a deficit of 16% of GDP. And the devaluation will help a little bit, but not enough to fix this problem.
And is given that there are a group of Venezuelan students who chained themselves to the Cuban embassy recently in protest to the secrecy surrounding the health of Hugo Chavez and the what they consider to be the overwhelming influence that Cuba has over the Chavez government, that leads me to question the extent to which inside of Venezuela, the oil subsidies for Cuba and for Venezuela, for Nicaragua as well, are they likely to lose popularity if indeed they are contributing to the economic situation? In other words, when you're feeling the pinch at home, you can't be quite so generous abroad.
Yes, I think as the government confronts the economic adjustments that they're going to face in 2013, the question of Venezuela's generous foreign aid is definitely going to be discussed. I don't think, however, that a Chavista government will cut spending to Cuba or Nicaragua. And the reason is that the amount that is provided to those two countries and to small Caribbean nations is significant, but not significant enough to really alleviate any of Venezuela's economic problems. So it will be symbolically too important in terms of what it will signal. These are important allies of Venezuela without necessarily fixing Venezuela's economic problems. So the government is going to say, you know, it's not worth the pain, so let's not touch that. They're going to have to adjust through other means. I personally don't think that under Chavista government, you're going to see changes in Venezuela's foreign policy to Venezuela and Nicaragua. I also don't think that the opposition, if it were to win an election and come to power in Venezuela, that they will move too drastically in that direction for the very same reasons. These are not going to generate sufficient savings to make that much of a change.
Well, of course, it has made an enormous difference to Cuba. I mean, Fidel Castro himself has credited Hugo Chavez with saving the Cuban Revolution.
You're absolutely right. The Cuban Revolution survived during between 1960 and 1989 as a result of enormous subsidies from the Soviet Union. And one could very well say that Venezuela replaced the Soviet Union and perhaps provides a much larger economic subsidy than the Soviet Union ever provided. Venezuela provides Cuba with not just surplus oil, so that Venezuela has extra oil that it can sell abroad for hard currency, but it also pays Cuba hard currency for the technical and military assistance that Cuba provides Venezuela. And this is a significant subsidy for Cuba. This has been a second miracle to have a major economic patron at this point in the history of the Cuban Revolution. And as I said, I think some analysts would say that the economic subsidy coming from Venezuela surpasses the economic subsidy that the Soviet Union provided, which were quite substantial.
Well, Hugo Chavez himself, as much as he's been vilified around the world, and particularly in the United States, he himself admitted that he came sort of late to adopt socialism, and he told John Lee Anderson of The New Yorker that he read Victor Hugo's epic novel Les Misérables, and of course he was also influenced by his father figure and mentor, Fidel Castro. But my understanding is that he wasn't as virulently anti-American until there was that cabal of right-wing politicians and businessmen and military men in 2002 who conducted a coup against Chavez and detained him briefly until the coup fell apart. And it's pretty clear that the coup plotters got more than a wink and a nod from the Bush administration. I recall at the time Condoleezza Rice, the national security advisor, more or less saying, you know, that we're happy to see him go. And of course, he was only gone for a little while and he was back with a vengeance. And my understanding is that he never really forgave the Americans for that, which is not entirely unjustified, surely.
There is some debate as to when Chavez's anti-Americanism developed. You're right that he didn't start out that way. But interestingly, there are some folks who would say the coup incident that you are describing, which was very delicate in U.S.-Venezuelan relations was not really the beginning of Chavez's most important period of animosity, but it took much later. Right after the coup, Chavez was conciliatory. The United States was invited to become part of a group of international nations called Friends of Venezuela. And so the enormous belligerence took a little longer. It took a little longer. But I am sure that, you know, it could very well have been that Chavez might have discovered, looking back, might have analyzed the events of the coup and said, you know, these guys, the Americans, cannot be trusted. So although there might not be coincidence in timing in terms of when is it that Chavez's anti-Americanism became as radical as it eventually became, you are right that it, I'm sure, plays a role. And the truth of the matter is that once Chavez decides to become very anti-American, he used the coup in every opportunity he had to justify his position. So it served him politically. Whether it was the cost of his anti-Americanism or not, that we will wonder and discuss. But he definitely used it to his advantage and to justify his very belligerence. There's no question that Hugo Chavez has been the most anti-American U.S. president in Latin America since the Castros in Cuba and Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, and certainly the most anti-American U.S. president in Latin America up until today when he just passed away.
Well, I recall, Javier Corrales, when Hugo Chavez addressed the United Nations General Assembly shortly after President George W. Bush had, he made the statement to the effect that he could smell sulfur, that the devil has been here. I mean, that was pretty extraordinary.
That was a pretty extraordinary move, and actually a move that I think he came to regret, because most people thought he crossed the line there, but he became very memorable. Those folks within Venezuela and abroad who were looking to find a very radical anti-American was able to see him there. But it also alienated some other folks who were like interested in challenging the United States, but not as inelegantly as Chavez did it at the United Nations. So it was both a good moment in his effort to become the radical in chief. On the other hand, it also alienated moderate leftists at home and abroad.
Well, Javier Corrales, it seems that in many ways, as a president, as a figure, as a personality, he really broke some interesting ground. Hugo Chavez, he was almost like a reality television star president. You know, he had his television show, Alo Presidente, and he sort of governed like a reality television show. And one of the more extraordinary things he did was once on live on television, he ordered his defense minister to send the Venezuelan armed forces to the Colombian border live on a broadcast of Alo Presidente.
I like the comparison with current reality TV because, as is the case with current reality TV, it has moments of unscripted excitement, but also moments of enormous dullness and predictability. You know, let's remember, he ran his cabinet meetings live on television every Sunday. The shows would go on for hours on end. Many times nothing major would happen. People would be bored to tears. But then suddenly he would surprise folks, even his closest associates, with incredibly unexpected policy decisions, impromptu decisions. So it was this combination of boring routine, prolonged unnecessarily for many hours, and then suddenly a major splash that you couldn't avoid. And the example of deciding we're going to send some troops to Colombia, decided spur of the moment, is a very good example. It was an odd situation. It's interesting to hear reporters discuss covering Chavez because they knew they needed to pay attention to his television show, but they also knew they would also say, who has time? Who has the 4 or 5 hours that are needed to watch a television show where, for the most part, nothing remarkable would happen? But he always kept open the possibility that he might surprise Venezuelans and the world with something that was unpredictable. That is definitely an aspect of the way that he governed Venezuela that we will always remember.
Well, there's no question that Hugo Chavez has tried to meet with President Obama, and he at one point he caught him in a multilateral meeting and gave him a couple of books, I think, by Noam Chomsky and a Latin American writer as well, who seems to have developed a relationship with Jimmy Carter, who's put out a very moving statement on the death of Hugo Chavez, saying how he and Rosalind came to know a man who expressed a vision to bring profound changes to his country to benefit especially those people who had felt neglected and marginalized. Although we have not agreed with him on all his methods followed by his government, we have never doubted Hugo Chavez's commitment to improving the lives of millions of his fellow countrymen. So Jimmy Carter obviously has always played a fairly useful role in trying to urge American presidents to be less rigid in their dealing with the so-called axis of evil, enemy type situations, which the U.S. has got itself trapped in. So what do you think is likely to happen here in terms of a possibility of a thaw in the relationship between the United States and Venezuela?
I think this is a great opportunity. A new government is going to start in Venezuela. We have a new administration with a new Secretary of State in the United States, new Director of the CIA, Department of Defense. So big changes politically. What we need to see is whether the Venezuelan government is interested in improving relations with the United States or not. That's number one. And number two, I think the United States might have lost some interest in improving relations with Venezuela. And the reason is the Americans, in my opinion, are very busy with many other problems. They feel that the Venezuelan oil, which is very important for the United States, continues to come in. Despite the rhetoric of the government, the Venezuelan government remains one of the United States' most important oil suppliers, and the United States can live with that. And so there's a certain complacency that, as bad as the rhetoric is, the economic side of it is okay. Now, Venezuela has two aspects of its foreign policy that the United States is watching very closely. One is proving to be very positive for the Americans, and that is Venezuela is committed to peace talks in Colombia, which the United States is supporting. And on that front, the United States and Venezuela are essentially on the right side, on the same side, excuse me. On the other hand, Venezuela's policy toward the Middle East is at odds with the United States, and especially with Iran and with Syria and with OPEC nations. And so we will have to see what aspect of Venezuela's foreign policy is going to prevail. The aspect that is playing a constructive role in Colombia, which the United States is welcoming, or the Venezuelan policy toward the Middle East, which is very irritating to the United States.
I was going to say, Javier, I'm afraid we've run out of time here.
Yes.
But I do appreciate you joining us, and I thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. Good night.
Good night. And again, I've been speaking with Javier Corrales, who's a professor of political science at Amherst College and the author of Dragon in the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. He serves on the editorial board of Latin American Politics and Society and America's Quarterly, and has been a consultant to the United Nations Center for Global Development and the American Academy for Arts and Sciences. His latest book is U.S.-Venezuelan Relations Since the 1990s, Coping with Mid-Level Security Threats. We're going to take a brief station break and be back with a further discussion of the legacy of Hugo Chavez.